Matthew chapter 17. And after 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and John, his brother, and brought them up on a high mountain by themselves, and was transfigured before them. And his face shone like the sun, and his clothing was white as the light. I'm sure that was really something to see. And behold, there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. Now, if you look at the account in Luke 9, Luke expounds just a little bit on it and says that Moses and Elijah were talking with Jesus about his death. Then Peter answered and said to Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you will, let us make here 3 tabernacles, one for you and one for Moses and one for Elijah. And again, in another account, we'll read that Peter, he's always the first one to speak up. But that they were very nervous and awkward and scared, and they just didn't really know what to say. And so Peter sort of blurted that out. While he yet spoke, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them. And behold, a voice out of the cloud said, This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Hear him. Now, the whole purpose for this, I think, is for the disciples to realize and understand that the law of Christ is about to take effect, and the law of Moses was going to be done away with. It's going to be nailed to the cross. We'll see that written later in Colossians. So basically, God is saying, hear him, not Moses and Elijah anymore. That was the old law of Moses. Now, this is my beloved Son, who's going to institute the law of Christ. Hear him. And when the disciples heard it, they fell on their faces and were greatly afraid. I would be too. And Jesus came and touched them and said, Arise, and do not be afraid. And when they had lifted up their eyes, they saw no man except Jesus only. And as they came down from the mountain, Jesus charged them, saying, Tell the vision to no man until the Son of Man has risen again from the dead. So, again, here he's referring to himself as the third person, but he's talking about himself. Don't tell anyone about this vision, this transfiguration, until after I've been raised from the dead. I think the reason why is he wants them to wait until after he is risen, because that's when his law takes effect. So again, like I said in the last chapter, timing is everything. Everything needs to be done per God's timeline. And his disciples asked him, saying, Why then do the scribes say that Elijah must come first? And that's in Malachi 4, verse 5. And Jesus answered and said to them, Truly Elijah shall come first and restore all things. But I say to you that Elijah has already come, and they did not know him, but have done to him whatever they wished. Likewise, the Son of Man shall also suffer from them. Then the disciples understood that he spoke to them of John the Baptist. And we've read that before, where John the Baptist is referred to as Elijah because he was also a prophet. And he came before Jesus, probably about 6 months before Jesus started his ministry, to restore all things. And I think that means to prepare, change the hearts of men, because this is going to be a huge change, especially for the Jews, to go from the law of Moses to the law of Christ. It's going to be a big transition. And when they had come to the multitude, there came to him a certain man kneeling down to him and saying, Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is insane and greatly vexed, for often he falls into the fire and often into the water. Now, to me, that sounds like epileptic. Now, he does have this evil spirit in him, and for a short period of time, God allowed this, and this particular evil spirit was really torturing this poor little boy. Now, I don't know how old the little boy was, but and I brought him to your disciples, and they could not cure him. Then Jesus answered and said, O faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him here to me. And Jesus rebuked the demon, and he departed out of him. I'm sure he sent him right back to torments. And the child was cured from that very hour. Then the disciples came to Jesus by themselves and said, "Why could we not cast him out?" And Jesus said to them, "Because of your unbelief." They just didn't quite have enough faith. "For truly I say unto you, if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed," now mustard seed is a teeny, teeny, tiny little seed, but it grows into a big, huge tree. I think we've read that too, where even the birds can nest in its branches, but it starts off as a teeny, tiny seed. "You shall say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it shall move, and nothing shall be impossible for you." Now, this would be, of course, in the realm of God's will. The apostles are not going to be able to just say, "Hey, mountain, move from there to over there," just willy-nilly, you know, for no particular reason. If it's God's will, they will be able to perform great miracles. "Although this kind does not go out, but by prayer and fasting." So it seems to me like this evil spirit, which, again, I believe are dead people, evil, wicked dead people that have gone to torments, and for a short period of time in the first century, God allowed them to take over someone's body. I think this was a particular nasty spirit. I do think that there were different levels of evil spirits, because some of them, it seems like, just really tortured the person that they were, you know, inhabiting at the time. This one seems like a particularly nasty one. I mean, he's inside a little boy, and I don't know how old he is. I just picture him as being young, and causing him to fall in the fire and in the water. I mean, that's just terrible. And also, you know what just boggles my mind when I think about this? You think about all the people in torments. Those are the people that are in, you know, they're in torments, basically waiting for judgment day. On judgment day, they'll get their final, you know, sentence. But right now, they're in torments, and they're lost, and there's just absolutely nothing they can do about it. You would think that all these people in torments would be just so full of regret and despair and sad and wanting anybody that they could tell back on earth, "Please, please listen to God, because there really is a God and it's all true." But no, I mean, some of these evil spirits that are allowed to come back and torment somebody are still wicked. It just amazes me that even after everything they know now, they're still just nasty, wicked people. "And while they abided in Galilee, Jesus said to them, 'The Son of Man shall be betrayed into the hands of men.'" Now, he's told them this once already. "And they shall kill him, and the third day he shall be raised again." Remember, he had just said that in the last chapter, and then Peter had said, "No, that's not going to happen." And then Jesus had to get on to Peter. "And they were exceedingly sorry. And when they had come to Capernaum, those who received tribute money came to Peter and said, 'Does your master not pay tribute?'" I think it was basically a temple tax. "He said, 'Yes.' And when he had come into the house, Jesus said to him first, 'What do you think, Simon? From whom do the kings of the earth take custom or tribute? From their own children or from strangers?'" In other words, do kings collect taxes from their own family? Or do they collect taxes from all the people? "And Peter said to him, 'From strangers.' Jesus said to him, 'Then the children are free.'" Now, Jesus' point is, I'm not obligated to pay tax to my own temple. You know, I'm basically paying taxes to myself. I own that temple because I'm the Son of God, and you're having me pay taxes? But he said, "However, lest we should offend them, go to the sea and cast a hook, take up the first fish that comes up, and when you have opened its mouth, you shall find a piece of money. Take that and give it to them for me and you." So they must not have had any money on them. So he had Peter go fish, and the first fish had a coin in his mouth, enough to pay the temple tax. And that is chapter 17.